It should be noted also that when a Senate subcommittee investigated the Inslaw case, the U.S. Department of Justice pressured potential witnesses not to testify, and that was done in a number of different ways, and apparently this greatly encumbered, I should say, Sam Nunn and this Senate subcommittee's investigation. In the second article, we took a look at more illegalities and irregularities in the handling of the Inslaw case. We took a look at what happened with Anthony Pesciuto, the deputy director of the Justice Department's bankruptcy trustee program. He was given a long-sought transfer to Albany, New York, after which he recanted his earlier testimony. After his recantation, his transfer was canceled, and after having bought a home in the Albany area, he was then forced to commute back to Washington, D.C. Bear in mind what happened with Cornelius Blackshear. He also got a visit from the Justice Department, and he recanted his testimony as well. George Basin, the bankruptcy judge who had ruled in favor of Inslaw against the Department of Justice, was one of only four out of 136 bankruptcy judges that were not reappointed. 132 were reappointed. Basin and three others were not reappointed. And Basin's position was taken by a fellow named W. Martin Teel, last name T-E-E-L, who had been a U.S. Department of Justice attorney who had argued unsuccessfully the Inslaw case on behalf of the Department of Justice. A very, very cozy arrangement indeed. In this article also, the second article, we took a look at the name of the company that Earl Bryan was affiliated with and which was attempting to get a hold of the Promise software. That company was called Hadron, H-A-D-R-O-N. Although initially very unsuccessful, after Edwin Meese, a friend and political and business associate of Earl Bryan's, after he became Attorney General, all of a sudden, the Hadron Company began getting defense contracts from the Pentagon, contracts from the Agency for International Development, as well as contracts from the U.S. Department of Justice. It's worth noting that while this was going on, the Deputy Attorney General at the time was D. Lowell Jensen, and Lowell Jensen was a former competitor of the Inslaw program. Also in this article, we took a look at how the person that was used by the Justice Department to handle payments to Inslaw, obviously those payments were not forthcoming, as I indicated, that person was a person who had been fired from Inslaw previously, and so obviously not somebody who was particularly fond of that company or the people working for it. In the third article, we took a look at how a U.S. Congressional subcommittee, actually the House Judiciary Committee, had accused now current Attorney General Richard Thornburgh of stonewalling the investigation in the Inslaw case by refusing to release documents to their investigation. We also noted that Richard Thornburgh was also thinking about running for the seat of the late Senator John Hines, recently killed in a plane crash. One wonders whether the heat on the Inslaw case, Inslaw investigation, has something to do with that decision. In this third article, we also took note, by the way, the dates of the first two articles. First article is from the Napa Sentinel of March 12th of 1991. The second article from March 19th of 1991. The third article that we looked at is from the Napa Sentinel of March 22nd of 1991. And in this third article, we took a look at the relative success of the pressure being brought to bear against those who would investigate the Inslaw case. After Judge Basin was replaced with S. Martin Teel, it should be noted that no federal bankruptcy judge was willing to handle the Inslaw case. And as we're going to see, the kinds of pressure that could be brought to bear went beyond some of the irregularities that we've looked at so far. In the fourth article, we took a look at the fact that the software, the Promise software, had been pirated by the Department of Justice, apparently on behalf of others. And one of the main witnesses in that was a fellow named Ari Ben-Manasseh, a former Israeli intelligence agent who was one of a number of links between the Inslaw case and not only the Iran-Contra scandal, but the October surprise in particular. And now, Ben-Manasseh stated that this particular software was sold to, among others, the Iraqi government, and the person he cited was a fellow named, as his witness to the sale of the software to the government, was a fellow named Carlos Carduin, C-A-R-D-O or D-U-E-N, take your pick, of Carduin Industries, a Chilean arms distributor, which, according again to Ari Ben-Manasseh, was involved in the transfer of the Promise software, the pirated Promise software, to Iraq. We also took a look at an article from the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle from December 30th of 1990, in which a British journalist named Jonathan Moyle, who was investigating the Carduin operation, was murdered, and his murder was made to look like a suicide. whether or not that murder had anything specifically to do with the Promise case or whether it was simply to do with the general operations of Carlos Cardoen, who had been supplying military equipment to Iraq, is, as I like to say so often, food for thought and grounds for further research. Our fifth article, which dealt with the Napa Sentinel of April 2nd of 1991, introduces a fellow named Michael J. Riconosciuto, R-I-C-O-N-O-S-C-I-U-T-O, a major player in this case. Now, Riconosciuto was in charge of research for a joint Wackenhut Corporation and Cabazon Indian venture, which was involved with selling a lot of armaments and military supplies to various governments in Central America and the Middle East. One of the major goals of this operation was support for the Contras in Nicaragua. It may very well have connected with the Iran-Contra scandal, as we shall see. Now, Riconosciuto, who again was making some modifications, or testified to having made modifications on the Promise software program in connection with the joint Cabazon-Wackenhut venture, it should be noted that he was offered a carrot and stick by a fellow named Peter Videniex, V-I-D-E-N-I-E-K-S, a Justice Department official, who testified, who warned him basically that things would go well if he refused to cooperate with the House Judiciary Committee, but that things would go badly if he did cooperate with them. And it should be noted that shortly after he did cooperate with them, he was arrested and originally held without bail, without any charges having been filed. Eventually, drug trafficking charges were filed against him. It should be noted, too, that Michael Riconosciuto testified that Earl Bryan was a regular visitor to the Wackenhut Cabazon venture, and it appears that this venture was the vehicle for the pirating of the Promise software to a number of foreign countries, as well as to federal intelligence agencies. It was sold only to the Justice Department, which refused to pay for it. It wound up being used by the CIA, the DIA, the NSA, and foreign governments as well. Perhaps the FBI as well may be using it. That has not been determined. Also, in the fifth article that we looked at, for the fifth Napa Sentinel article, we took a look at the name of Robert McFarlane, allegedly connected with the sale of Promise to Israel. We'll come back to McFarlane as we take a look at connections between the October Surprise and the Inslaw case. In the sixth Napa Sentinel article that we looked at, this one from April 5th of 1991, we took a look at a number of interesting connections to the Inslaw case and a number of developments. In the first place, we took a look at the murder of three Indians who had objected to various features of the joint Wackenhut-Cabazon venture. We also took a look at House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jack Brooks of Texas, charged that the U.S. Department of Justice, once again, was withholding some 200 documents needed by his committee for the investigation of the Inslaw case. Again, we took a look at the murder of three Indians, the murder initially of three Indians, later eight, who objected to the Cabazon-Wackenhut venture, and the testimony by the sister of one of the slain men that the software modification and the operation at the Cabazon Reservation were connected to the Iran-Contra scandal. We also took a look at a man named Charles Hayes, who bought computers from the Justice Department for salvage and who filed an affidavit stating that the pirated Promise software was in one of the computers that he got a hold of. Shortly after he filed this, the Justice Department sued him, claiming that the memory banks had not been erased, but they only did that after he maintained that the computers contained the pirated software. Oh, by the way, it should be noted, too, that in the very first article we looked at, it was noted that the Promise software itself, because of its ability to track cases, could be used to expose corruption in the Federal Bankruptcy Trustee Program, and this is one of the reasons why the Promise software was viewed as a serious problem. In the seventh Napa Sentinel article that we looked at from April 9th of 1991, we took a look at a report on 2020, which laid the blame for the execution of the three Indians who objected to the Wackenhut Cabazon venture at the door of the CIA. We also took a look at speculation that perhaps, this on the part of the Canadian government, that perhaps the sale of the Promise software was used to illegally fund the Contras. It should be noted in this context that the Canadian government itself is investigating the Inslaw case, and specifically the fact that it appears that both the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the Canadian Security and Intelligence Service, CSIS, are both among the illegal recipients of the pirated software. And again, the Canadian government has stated that quite possibly the Canadian officials are indicating that pirated software may have helped fund the Contras in Nicaragua. So here is a possible connection with the Iran-Contra scandal. We also took a look at, in this article, an allegation so far corroborated by just one source, that Michael Reconosciuto may very well have been involved in the laundering of some $40 million for the Bush Quail campaign. So obviously this is an individual who has an awful lot of knowledge about specifically where the bodies are buried. The eighth article that we looked at from the Napa Sentinel was from the Napa Sentinel of Friday, April 12th of 1991. In this particular story, we took a look at a claim, this in an affidavit submitted by the bagman for the killing of the three Indians, that the killing was done by three former Green Beret who were currently, or at least at that time, employed as firemen by the city of Chicago. Also, apparently, some of the people behind the Cabazon Wackenhut venture had links to organized crime, including Jimmy Hoffa and the Gambino family. Also, it should be noted that five more dissident Cabazon Indians were murdered in connection with this, and in connection with a possible Chilean link to this whole scandal. Bear in mind the Cardoen connection cited earlier. It was maintained that the person who paid the bagman the money to kill these Indians had been involved in the assassination of Salvador Allende in Chile. In our ninth article, this one from the Napa Sentinel of Tuesday of April 16th of 1991, we looked at a connecting link between the Inslaw case and the series The Miscellaneous Archive Show dealing with the CIA connection to the SNL scandal. This link was a fellow named Dr. John Philip Nichols, and Nichols had boasted of working for the CIA and apparently did both assassination attempts against Fidel Castro and, significantly perhaps, Salvador Allende in Chile. It should be noted again that Dr. John Nichols was hooked up with a fellow named G. Wayne Reeder, one of the CIA people or alleged CIA people that we looked at in connection with the Silverado Savings and Loan connection. He was one of the possible CIA links to the SNL scandal. That is to say, Dr. John Nichols, and through him, G. Wayne Reeder. We took a look at both those individuals in connection with the CIA connection to the SNL scandal. And G. Wayne Reeder, interestingly and possibly significantly, was also a major borrower at the Silverado Savings and Loan, one of whose directors was Neil Bush, George Bush's son. In the 10th and final Napa Sentinel article that we looked at, this from the Napa Sentinel of Tuesday, April 23rd of 1991, we took a look at some of the interesting connections of the Wackenhut Corporation. And again, if you'd like to read more about Wackenhut, the book Spooks by Jim Hogan would be an excellent source in this regard. Among the people working for the Wackenhut Corporation are former CIA Director Admiral Stansfield Turner, the CIA Director under Jimmy Carter, and an individual we will come back to in our next installment, in which we're going to look at connections between Inslaw, connecting links between Inslaw and not only the Iran-Contra scandal, but specifically the October surprise as well. It should be noted that there was an abortive uprising by the Cabazon Indians to wrest control of their reservation back from the likes of Dr. John Nichols, and that the sister of one of the slain Indians, eventually recalled there were eight slain Indians, that a sister of one of these Indians was temporarily put in charge, but that armed and uniformed Wackenhut guards were swarming all over the reservation shortly after that. We also took a look in our final article at indications by Michael Reconosciuto that he would not, after all, cooperate with the House Judiciary Committee's investigation, although he claims he gave them the names of lots of other people who could help them out. This in order to eliminate not only the possibility of conviction of two consecutive life sentences, but also threats were made against the life of his four-year-old son. The last item of importance that we looked at in this last article is one which will perhaps serve as a bridge to the material next week. The Australian government now is charging that the Promise software is being used by the CIA to tap into Australian government computers. And there is speculation in this article that perhaps the pirated, the alterations made by Reconosciuto on the Promise software were to permit an override password to be administered by the CIA, which would permit it to tap into the computer banks of foreign governments and their intelligence services in particular. We're going to come back to that possible password override next week. One of the things that occurs to me is that perhaps this was one of the motivations for selling this software to other intelligence services, was to permit CIA to penetrate their computer banks. We will come back to the Inslaw case next week, as I said. This is a case which has a lot of implications for all of us, in particular for people right here in the Silicon Valley, the Santa Clara Valley, which is, after all, where I do my broadcasting. I might want to think about some of the things implicated in this particular case. There may be people in the listening audience who do not feel that the sorts of things that I talk about in this program will ever affect them perfectly, or personally, However, it should be noted that this valley, the Santa Clara Valley, is, of course, the epicenter of the American electronics industry. It prides itself on its tradition of entrepreneurship. I think that people who listen to this program particularly, in particular people who listen to this program in this valley, might want to think about the old street dictum, which I cite often on this program, what goes around comes around. That street dictum basically it sums up virtually everything I have learned, or the lessons of everything I have learned in some 20 years of political research. Sooner or later, what goes around comes around. And when there's no justice, basically there's no justice. People have always sought the protection of law in order to protect them from those more powerful than themselves. Well, unfortunately, the rule of law is obviously badly compromised, and some of the machinations, some of the skullduggery, some of the chicanery that we've taken a look at in connection with the Inslaw case ultimately could come back to haunt people right here in the Santa Clara Valley. Because, unfortunately, justice in America in calendar year 1991 basically means just that. It means just us, and that's the way the people who administer it view it. And that ultimately could come back to haunt people. So, in conclusion, a case which is obviously of great interest to all of us, not just because of its links to the national security establishment, the Iran-Contra scandal, possibly the Contra support effort, apparently, but also it has grave implications for the quality of life and the possibilities of life here in the United States. And, again, people who are involved in business or people who are simply going about their lives in a normal, everyday fashion might want to evaluate just how long it's going to be before some of the abuses that I talk about in this program will be affecting you personally. Obviously, Bill Hamilton, a very conservative person, by the way, a person who couldn't wait to sell his software to the Department of Justice, well, he fell victim to this sort of thing, and it could very well be that at some point people listening to this program will be on the receiving end of the same kind of treatment. That concludes the prepared portion of tonight's broadcast.